Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, that's the new Blink-182 you hear right there. They did really well on the Billboard charts. Their new album, California, sold about 170,000 copies its first week. Really, really good numbers. And a lot of people are talking about them lately. I'm pretty much always talking about Blink-182, so I went and found someone who could talk about them with me. His name's Andy Greenwald. His book, Nothing Feels Good, Punk Rock, Teenagers, and Emo, I read when I was in high school, bought it out of Barnes & Noble at Menlo Park Mall in New Jersey. And yeah, it really taught me a lot of the backstory on those genres. And these days, Andy writes a lot about TV and music, so I was wondering how much he keeps up on stuff like Blink-182. The answer is yes, he keeps up on this stuff a lot. And yeah, I really shouldn't have doubted him. So we really went in about the new Blink album, about where pop punk and emo are right now, about new bands we like, old bands we love. So I hope you enjoy our talk here. The Alt in Our Stars podcast posts about once a week on billboard.com. I'm your host, me, Chris Payne, every week. And it posts all different days, so to keep up with the podcast, you should subscribe. You can do that by searching The Alt in Our Stars in iTunes or the podcast app of your phone. Also, while you're there, star rating helps a huge amount, just getting attention for the podcast. I put a ton of work into it. It's probably my favorite thing I do for Billboard, so I really appreciate star rating or just specific feedback you might have for me, things you like and don't like about the show that you can write in there. And also, once you're at iTunes or the podcast app or whatever, you can dig into old episodes. If you're into stuff like this, if Blink-182 brought you into this podcast, we've had Pup on the show, Modern Baseball, Beach Slang, interviews with those bands, and I think you'd really like them. So lots of stuff there to dig into. Been doing this podcast for about a year and a half now. So here it is, Blink-182 Talk with Andy Greenwald. Hey there, you're listening to the Alt in Our Stars podcast. Today's guest, podcaster of The Ringers, The Watch podcast for HBO, USA, creator of content, maybe you could say.
I guess.
Everyone makes content.
That's the thing.
It's Andy Greenwald.
Content is our currency. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming by. So, Blink-182.
Yeah, people are talking again, huh?
Those guys, killing it.
You guys must have been, I mean, you work here at Billboard. Were you surprised that they had a number one record? Or do you like...
Well, the funny thing with number one records these days is a lot of it just comes down to what week it comes out.
Right.
Because if it comes out in a week where not much is popping, you can not really have a good sales week and get a number one record.
Right.
So it's sort of like number one with an asterisk sometimes.
Right. So you can finesse it. So maybe they knew what they were doing. But it still knocked Drake off and Drake came back, right? So
yeah. I mean, like, either way, I was 172,000 sales.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Not even with streams. Like, that's just people
going. It's like people buying a compact disc.
Or going into iTunes and spending like
$10. I thought you meant like physical.
Oh, no. But everything together.
Right.
All things considered.
Actual purchases.
172,000 people.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So that's what made me think of having you buy for the podcast, you know, the success of Blink-182. But
because I'm old enough to remember buying CDs and reference them in the first 5 minutes of your pod.
Yeah. I heard you on the Grantland, one of the pop culture podcasts, with Lauren Mayberry from Churches, and mm-hmm. she was like, Yeah, Andy Greenwald, that guy pretty much wrote the book on emo.
It's so true.
I can't make that joke.
It's
true. I can't make that joke.
Well, you could credit Lauren. She deserves all the credit.
So we'll credit her, but yeah, I read that book in high school, and yeah, I was really getting into the scene. I have been for a few years, but that filled in a lot of like the background knowledge, got my history.
So where were you in high school? What was your band? What was your location?
I was in New Jersey.
Okay.
Northern New Jersey.
All right. So like Saves the Day country, like Lifetime country. Were those your bands?
I loved Saves the Day. Lifetime was a little bit before my time.
That's true.
I had to kind of get into them retroactively. And even kind of like Saves the Day.
Right.
This was like 2003. Yeah, 2004 was like when I really got in.
My book came out November 2003.
Yeah. So basically like learning about Promise Ring or something like that was, even though it was like 7 years prior, was like a big history lesson.
The biggest gulf in your cultural life, I think, is something like that. It's like from when you're getting into stuff at 17, 18 and stuff that came out when you were only 10 or 11. Because now, as an adult, things that came out 6 or 7 years ago, you don't even realize. It's like a blink of an eye. But then that is huge. Those are different eras, like fully foundational shifts in music scenes.
And I think a lot of the time when you're getting into culture as a kid, what's going to seem coolest to you is like what was hot just before you.
Sure.
Like, what was your cool older sibling or cousin into?
Well, you also are desperate at that age to prove some establishment. You want to be holding on to something that came before you. You're not a poser. You're not a Johnny Come Lately or whatever. You have some sense of where this came from, because the automatic entry point for any subcultural scene is how long you've been here. What do you know? Everyone's always looking. Everyone's always trying to pull up the ladder behind them, basically.
Yeah.
Because that's how you prove your worth.
So yeah, my favorite band in those years, the one that basically got me into everything, was Via Hearing, The Middle, Jimmy Eat World on Top 40 Radio, and
nice.
That is what started
what
it all.
What a wonderful gateway drug.
Yeah, it really was.
The thing about Jimmy Eat World that was so funny is that they were kind of an afterthought, not a joke. They were respected because they were nice guys and they like put in a lot of work in the van, but they were the band from the 90s emo scene that shocked everyone by signing to a major. They signed to Capitol. And it almost seemed like, because Promise Ring didn't sign to a major and all these other bands were suddenly getting scouted, Jimmy Eat World was the one that signed. And their first record, Static Prevails, was immediately ignored. And Clarity, which is a masterpiece, was also pretty much ignored.
And almost not even released.
Almost not even released. But then the other thing was that, Lucky Denver Mint, which is a perfect pop song. Mm-hmm. I remember the biggest deal in the world was that song was on the soundtrack to the Drew Barrymore movie Never Been Kissed. Everyone's like, oh, they're going to make it. Like, that was a big deal. And then they didn't. They got dropped, basically, and then recorded Bleed American on their own after crowdsourcing. This all seems like very 2016 in a way.
Yeah.
They crowdsourced by touring and then made this album that is just essentially a perfect pop rock album. And it absolutely did what you said. I mean, I wrote about in my book that the video for The Middle, in many ways, captured everything about what that scene was, what it was about to be. It was about the people who were awkward at the party and didn't want to do the things the jocks and popular kids did.
Yeah.
But they were secretly hot, too, and they secretly wanted to make out, too. And that's essentially what happened as emo and pop punk went super mainstream in the years to follow that.
And we can take it further. The band really into sports.
Yes.
The drummer, Zach Glenn, his dad played Major League Baseball.
Yes. And I remember I went on tour with them for my book in the summer of 02. Oh, and this is where it ties into our bigger conversation, because they were the opening band on the Pop Disaster Tour with Green Day and Blink-182. So I was with them in like sheds across Texas, I think. And maybe I met them in Arizona. I don't even remember. No, that would have been their home state. So it wasn't that. It was in Texas. And I remember being on the bus with them and being so shocked at how dull it was to be traveling with
lots
a rock
of
band.
Like short sleeve button down t-shirts all pressed,
yeah,
ironed for the next show,
yeah, and like a lot of conversations about just stuff and like no depth at the in the not that they're not deep guys, but they just didn't want to have those conversations. And and then maybe after the show a hard-earned single beer. It was very, very tame, but they're very serious. And Jim, to this day, I talked to him last year, I mean, he just really likes writing songs, and he, you know, they probably, and they, he still writes good songs, but the needle never moved further than The Middle, I think, because he never gave anyone anything to work with.
There was this song called Jen that was, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, so you really like Jimmy Eat World.
I love Jimmy Eat World.
Yeah.
There were bands I wrote about in that book that I came to like and bands that I really, truly admire, but I love Jimmy Eat World. I love, I mean, when they have a new record coming out at the end of this year, and I am absolutely, we're going to do a pod on them. I'm going to like make a Deep Cuts playlist.
Okay.
I love that band.
I'm excited for that. But before the two of us go off on too deep of a tangent, this song, Jen, was cut at the last minute from the track listing of Futures, the album that followed up Bleed American.
Very underrated record.
Extremely poppy song that I thought could have been like another middle if they had gone with it.
They had songs like that on Chase This Light. I mean, they've never stopped writing pop songs like that, but the moment shifted. And then to have a pop rock song on the radio... What does that even mean? I mean, there is no radio for that. There's no lane for that kind of music anymore, but they just keep making it.
Yeah, and I think that's the sort of thing that ultimately could hold back how far Blink-182 goes with this album. Because, like, Bored to Death, the lead single, is getting played all over alternative and rock radio. Mm-hmm. Both, like, the alternative, the lighter side, and, like, mainstream rock, where you would hear lots of, like, Breaking Benjamin and Five Finger Death Punch. They're being played, like, across all formats on rock. But for a top 40 station... they're just not going to get played because you almost hear no guitar on top 40 these days. That's just how it is.
There's no place for guitar. And we talked about at the beginning that number of units they moved. You got to think that that's for the same reason that, like, if the Eagles made a new record, it's their first week sales would be amazing too, because even though the classic Blink-182 fan who was, what, in high school 15 years ago or something like that, they still bought CDs because that was right on the cusp of Napster. And so it's very possible that they still buy things and want to buy things, whereas I don't think the next generation will. And I also don't think that means they'll continue to sell at that level.
Yeah. So and unfortunately, I sort of fear that with a lot of rock bands because I see across the board, you know, like Panic at the Disco also had a super impressive sales week.
That's a great example, yeah, because that was more surprising to
me.
But that's also just the power of one underserved fan base acting in unison, right, on a single week.
Yeah, and none of the bands that have these sales weeks are new.
No, and then the only one that I think was really prepared to adapt to the moment is Fall Out Boy, who always were a pop band, I don't know, polyamorous, let's say, in their styles and interests. So them coming back fully gunning for whatever counts as pop radio these days, I think was really smart, but also very consistent with who they were. I don't think Jimmy Eat World or Blink-182 are going to do that, nor should they.
Consistent in that Fall Out Boy, I don't think in the history of the band has ever turned down an award show appearance. So I don't want to shade Fall Out Boy.
I love Fall Out Boy. We can talk Fall Out Boy.
I didn't like Save Rock and Roll, the comeback record at first.
I love that record.
Then I got really into it. I still can't really get into, what was the name of the last one?
American
Beauty,
American
Psycho.
Yeah, that was not nearly as good. It was much more Craven, but,
for sure.
You know.
So that's a very good adjective to describe the album.
But I respect that. I mean, that's the thing. I did two cover stories on Fall Out Boy during their first iteration, one for Spin and one for Blender, and that was the thing about Pete even then. I mean, he was not, I don't want to say he was shameless, he was ambitious. And that in itself at the time seemed a little bit out of sync because you still kind of weren't supposed to say that.
I think if you're a rock band, especially.
If you're coming from any kind of underground, you are never supposed to have ambition, which is always nonsense because everyone has ambition. And I prefer bands that have ambition and want to write big pop songs and be liked a lot, and they achieve that. And so I think in that sense, because he's always been that way, he basically hasn't gone off his path from the beginning. Whereas, I mean, if you look back at those Blink videos from like Take Off Your Pants and Jacket and when they broke through on TRL, all their videos were about making fun of the fact that they were doing TRL. But, you know, Whisper Voice, they were doing TRL and they were writing pop songs. There's no shame in that.
Yeah, and it's also super interesting with Pete that he did not come from any sort of an industry background in any way. Like, he was just a hardcore kid from Chicago who got tired of doing that sort of stuff and wanted to be in more of a, you know, pop-oriented band. So all of this, like, ingenuity from, like, working within the industry, it just sort of, like, comes from what he picked up.
I always loved the divide in that because, the divide in that band was so contemporary that they had Patrick, who was a musical genius and wrote all the songs, and then you have a guy who basically in the band who is their manager, de facto manager, who takes care of everything else, and that was very, very smart and ahead of its time.
Yeah, and also just like great partnerships in music. I think a lot of times it's more on the down low because it'll be like a rapper and a producer, it'll be like Drake and 40 or something, but with them that partnership is there for everyone to see, and basically that's why they had to get back together after they broke up.
Yeah.
Because neither of them could do it on their own. They needed each other.
They needed each other.
Man, remember Patrick Stump's foray into being an R&B singer?
Soul punk?
Soul punk.
I liked his tuxedo. I like that kid. What about Black Cards? What about Black Wentz's Cards. Band? They never released a thing, did they?
They brought Bebe Rexha into the game.
I know, so we'll always thank them for that.
Oh, yeah. Let's drop in some music. This is Bored to Death from the new Blink album. What do you think of the new Blink record?
I think it's fine. I wish I liked it more, and I'm one of the few people out on the forefront of the Neighborhoods might secretly be their best album for game. Huh. People do not agree with me. I love late period Blink. I love Neighborhoods. I love Dogs Eating Dogs. I love the self-titled record, which shocked me when I realized that was 2003, because I still think of that as late period Blink, but that was years and years ago. I think the new record is probably as good as it could be. It's way too long. I think it would be much better if it was 10 tracks. I think that ultimately Tom is missed, and I don't want to be one of those guys that says they can't reinvent themselves, they don't have any right to continue. I think Skiba is fantastic. I'm a huge Alkaline Trio fan. I love that band. I think he was a very smart choice to replace Tom, in as much as anyone can replace him. But when you go back and you listen to even Neighborhoods, an album they don't like, mm-hmm. or even the self-titled record, the thing that made that band so good was the fact that all three of them very much appeared to be pursuing careers in different bands, yet somehow they were on the same track, on the same record, on the same stage. The dynamic between them, where they would literally be pulling in opposite directions and vocal lines on the same song, that tension, it probably could never hold. And so I completely understand why one of them is off chasing aliens while the other one is still chasing Billboard charts. But that's what made them so dynamic. And I think that tension is missing from the record. But like Mark Hoppus could write good punk pop songs forever. I don't think that's ever going to stop. So, and it's not like he's gotten worse at that. I just miss the fact that there used to be like a shot of acid on his, not the drug, like literally like squeezing lemon, mm-hmm. Tom's voice on the more, carby bottom of Mark Hoppus's songs.
Yeah, and they had John Feldman co-write for them across the whole album, and that was the first time they ever worked with a collaborator like that. Mm-hmm. And I just think the songs are just tight across the whole thing. Even though it's 14 tracks, I think it holds my attention all the way through, which albums that long normally don't. And even though I'm kind of like rewriting a lot of the lyrics in my head as I listen to the album, the hooks all land really well. The songs are structured really well. There's like acoustic songs that really work, and I wasn't expecting it to be that varied.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just think there's sometimes when Mark goes back in the juvenilia and like goes back to being like, you know, we're just telling dick jokes in our parents' backyard. I'm like, well, you're 40. You know, the reason I like Neighborhoods is because they were like, we're older now and we're trying to figure that out and if this even makes sense. That's obviously a core part of who he is and what he's interested in doing in songwriting, but that's the part of Blink that's always interested me the least.
Yeah. Although he embraces dad jokes a lot on Twitter.
He seems like a swell guy. I mean, I'm glad that he's still doing it because this makes him happy. I mean, I'm not the target demographic for someone who's just like, they've sold out or they're over, they should give it up. I mean, as long as he's enjoying himself, he should be doing it. And I think I hope that even though, you know, Tom is wearing a tinfoil hat somewhere, I hope he's enjoying this this reconsideration of their work critically that's happening. I mean, right when I sat down, you mentioned that Kay Sana has a piece in the New Yorker that I'm looking forward to reading. But like, they were a great band for a very long time and wrote an incredible, I mean, their greatest hits is unimpeachable. And they were definitely not taken seriously at the time. And they didn't take themselves seriously very often.
Yeah. What do you think of, how do you think Skiba's taken this now?
I don't know. I mean, that guy, Alkaline Trio discography holds up. I mean, that is a band that was never appreciated in their time. And when they were putting out some of their best records, like From Here to Infirmary, and I'm blanking on some of the, you know, the early
Good Morning.
Good Morning.
All those
so
great
good.
Puns.
Oh, so many puns.
Good Morning.
So many death
good
puns.
Good Morning with the morning spelled with an O-U.
It's a little absurd. But all those early records and those records on Vagrant, they were putting them out when Blink was in its glory. And they did fine, but they were really underappreciated. So I hope that what he's thinking is maybe he's, I don't know, this is, I'm always looking at this from an old person perspective at this point. I'm like, maybe he has a kid. Maybe he's married. I don't know. But it's nice to have a job that pays well. And I don't think he's, I don't mean to say he's phoning it in, but this wasn't his band. So whatever he brings to it is probably, you know, icing at this point. And I think his songs are nice. And his songs intentionally are not Tom-style songs, and they're also not Alkaline Trio songs, which I think is a very tough thing, tough line to walk.
Yeah, I actually, I mean, side note, like Alkaline Trio was a short second favorite to Blink, or to Jimmy Eat World when I was growing up.
Yes.
Yeah, so I absolutely feel you there. I could probably rattle off all the puns from those early albums across the lyrics, but anyway.
Oh, Crimson was the one after.
Yeah, Crimson.
Crimson Bangs.
I remember going to an album release signing in Jersey for that and being so stoked because also a Get Up Kids live album was coming out the same day.
Nice.
Got both of them.
The amazing thing about like 03, 04, and right when I wrote the book and then I was writing about these bands for various magazines, you know, we said at the beginning that generations of fans are always trying to pull the ladder up behind them. This was the era where you could see bands who were doing fine suddenly see other bands find the ladder above the level where they were and not know what to do with it. And I remember seeing Jimmy Eat World play here, Irving Plaza, Roseland, right when Bleed American was popping off, and they asked Promise Ring to open for them, and because they were friends. And I remember watching Promise Ring, and Promise Ring were touring Woodwater, which was supposed to be their like big, mature leap forward. And I remember watching Davey Von Bohlen like look at this crowd, ignoring him, and being ready for Jimmy Eat World. And it was like watching, it was just watching your life pass you in a Ferrari. Like he just realized that he missed the off-ramp onto the next level of success. And
yeah.
Similarly, like Alkaline Trio were so good at doing that specific thing they did. And I remember seeing them open for My Chemical Romance, and they were good friends, and they complimented each other as bands in both senses.
Absolutely.
But they couldn't do that. They had no interest in doing that, but they could see the levels of fandom, and they couldn't level up. And I feel like that has to be frustrating, even if you never let on that it is.
Yeah, although I also think that sometimes not leveling up, even though you don't get the short-term rewards, it kind of prepares you for a more lifelong...
A longer-lasting career.
Like Newfound Glory is still like consistently like doing what they do and like pretty successful at it.
That's true. If you can make peace with being, you know, solid B-minus level everything. I don't mean in your life. I mean there's great. I think personally there's great glory and great respect to be had for people who just make the music they want to make and they interact with their fans and they're fine with it. But I think it can be a rough landing if you've either tasted the level just before or if you've really really worked to try and get there.
Yeah, because like. Around the time the scene had really peaked and like bled through into the mainstream, in like 2007 or so, you would see these bands that right away formed and like were touring in buses and had like really fancy gear from the get-go.
Yeah.
Like right away, let's just like have the expectation of being huge. And like maybe they had a big hit like that. Maybe they're like screamy electro, but still very melodic kind of rock song like was a big hit, but. Those bands really aren't around today still. They probably just broke up after a few years.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't write about music on a regular basis at all anymore. But so I don't know if there has been another gold rush. But I think that to my mind, one of the reasons why it was interesting to write about was that emo gold rush was sort of the last one where the major labels tried to do it the old way to see if it could work.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that, Fall Out Boy and My Chemical Romance were the only ones that I think approached traditional levels of hit. They were sort of farmed and developed that way. But because of Fall Out Boy did of what it did, I mean, Fueled by Ramen's whole thing, right, was that they would, and all the labels were doing this, they were just going around wink, wink, investing in baby bands and funding their tours and funding their records, but releasing them on indies because they knew the kids still cared about that and then upstreaming them and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
It was pretty, the thing is behind the backstage, I think, in those meetings, it's always the same. Like when people talk about like the major labels going chasing punk bands or new wave bands or grunge bands, the decade changes, but the handshakes and the dinners and the drugs all stay the same backstage. And there are a lot of casualties.
Yeah, it's really true. I think another one on a positive note you can throw into that group of Fall Out Boy by Kem is Paramore.
Oh, and right, sure. Yeah, that's another one where she was basically, they signed her, right? And then they sort
she's
of,
the only one signed.
Quote, unquote, formed a band around her.
Yeah, like they've, you know, come clean with it in years since, but basically they were telling all these fake stories and interviews to make it seem like they had formed like completely free of you know, Atlantic Record pulling strings. But basically, like, she was signed as a solo artist and at first they wanted to make her just be marketed as a pop star, but she was like, no, no, I want to like do the band thing. So they're like, okay, they did the, you know, with Atlantic Records and putting them on Fueled by Ramen. But what I always thought was just like so remarkable about that, and like why I just think Haley is the truth so much, is that all of the people who formed Paramore with her were her actual friends,
yes,
from Tennessee. That side of the story was completely legit.
I have a lot of respect for her. I like her a lot. But like, what, I also wonder, who cares anymore? I mean, maybe in 08, I'm not in touch with the kids, but I don't know if they care anymore, like in a post, not just post Pete Wentz universe, but just a post fame universe. Like, I don't know if that story really matters anymore, but it's interesting to note that she still had to conform to a certain narrative to be accepted in a certain world, thinking that acceptance into that world would then lead to greater acceptance in the pop marketplace.
And she was like 16 when she like got all like, when she basically told Atlantic Records, like, no, I want to do it this way. Because normally in that situation, what happens is, you know, the front person is signed and the label just goes out and finds like a bunch of dudes to form the band, usually like a lot older who have like been in the industry more, who are just strangers. And like, it's like, here, make a record with them, go tour with these people.
Studio musicians, day players, people they're comfortable with.
Yeah, but like, I've gone on both Paramore cruises and like spoken a lot with fans, and like, the vibe that I get from that is they really do care about Paramore as the band aspect.
It's true. I guess that's nice to know too, I guess. I realize I was arguing more in the cynical direction, but having a connection, especially as you're getting into music, having a connection with a band as idea of a band, not just that they make good songs, but that they are legitimately friends or having these intense relationships while you have an intense relationship with their music, that's still key.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely whack to think of just the band model as just superior to like the solo person, but it's like a rallying cry with them now, the Paramore fans. Duos are bands, is what they're saying now, because Paramore is just two people officially.
Is he signed?
No.
She signed still?
Yeah, as far as I know, it's just Haley Williams who is signed.
Yeah.
Taylor York, the guitarist, is the other one who's officially in the band.
Right, but that there's probably a lot of paperwork regarding that relationship.
Yeah, so without getting too down that rabbit hole, but yeah, like the bassist, Jeremy, who left the band recently, they were involved in some sort of legal dispute where he wanted more money out of...
It's so ugly on that side of the ball. It always has been. It always will be.
Yeah, but I mean, that's probably a very real thing that a lot of, like, quote, bands grapple with these days, where the one famous one is the one who's, like, the songwriter is signed, and the rest, even though they call it a band, probably aren't on that contract.
It's probably true. And I don't know if people are more... I don't know if young music fans pay more attention to the industry part of it now or less or the same amount, but that sort of stuff really wasn't talked about. I mean, maybe, like, if you go on the Absolute Punk message boards or something, like in 04, like, people would definitely be talking shit about X band that seemed like they were fake or posers or whatever. That always exists. But in terms of just like the casual fandom knowing, I don't know.
I think you can go to the Absolute Punk message boards any year and find people talking.
People are talking shit about this podcast right now. We haven't even posted it yet.
But yes.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
What were we talking about before that?
Haley.
Haley.
Bands that were signed in that era and didn't make it.
We were talking about like some of the worst stuff, or this like the very thirsty for the airwave stuff that came out in like 06, 07 when that peaked. Let's drop in some music. What is like what comes to mind for like the worst song that came out of that?
worst song? I mean, you're taking me back. I'm trying to think. I mean, pretty much anything on Victory Records that wasn't Thursday or Taking Back Sunday in the beginning, there was an era where, you know, that this label, which was just notoriously sketchy, just basically like, I mean, I don't want to, they were just cooking all sorts of books and signing bands, young bands, these very punishing, vindictive contracts. And Taking Back Sunday and Thursday came off on back of their records on Victory, and were then signed by major labels with the legal and financial clout to free them from this label. But in the wake of them leaving, Victory saw an enormous opening and started just signing dozens of baby bands who were desperate to follow in the footsteps of these other bands. And I couldn't, I mean, I can't even name them right now. I mean, they were just, it was so cynical. You know, they had a New Thursday, they had a Taking Back Sunday clone, they had a lot of My Chemical Romance clones. And I was interested to see, this actually made it in my book, that like, because I wrote a lot of my book about Dashboard Confessional, and when near the end of writing, I saw that there was this guy called the Lindsay Diaries who was basically doing Dashboard Confessional.
I remember that.
I talked to him about it, and it was just like, it was so shameless. I kind of couldn't believe it. And then I saw in your publication in Billboard, there was this article last year about this dude, what's his name, Front Porch Stoop or something?
Oh, Front Porch Step.
It's Front Porch Step. And I was like, I can't believe, I mean, he seems like a total ski, like it seemed like totally
well,
sketchy.
Well, yeah, that was the whole, he was on Warped Tour, and it became known that he was like sexually harassing underage girls via text message.
But even separate and apart from his apparently very gross, potentially illegal, generally awful activities, the music was terrible. And it was essentially like fifth rate or like ninth generation watered down Dashboard. But I was like, oh, so we're still doing this. I thought that was interesting.
It was finally secondhand serenade was being ripped off by someone.
Thirdhand serenade. I mean, so tell me, so you were more involved in the scene then even. So what were some of these like baby bands that you remember? Like what was the nadir of major label emo?
Do you remember the Crabcore?
No.
Do you the video, what was the band? It was this really ridiculous sceney metalcore band who had this electronic breakdown in a screamo song, and in the video, the guitarist in super skinny, like maybe like 24 waist black jeans,
yeah,
is doing like a crab walk with his guitar, and it became like a meme.
No, I don't think I knew what a meme was.
Like, what
then?
Is the attack? That's who it was.
Oh God, yeah, I remember seeing these names and just being like, I've tapped out. I just can't. I can't do it anymore, especially because bands like My Chem, who I genuinely love as people and their music, it was thoughtful performance. Like what they were doing with makeup and with performance and with character and stuff was really inspired. And you can see that in the stuff Gerard does now in comic books and, mm-hmm. and just in his artistic life. And of course, is when everything is copied, it was like, oh, they're wearing makeup, so that's what we're going to do.
I think when and if, but probably when, My Chemical Romance gets back together, people are going to lose their shit.
I think they are. Well, I think we saw that this week because there was a teasing video released that was to promote. Have they announced what it's for? Because
they haven't announced formally what it's for yet. So they're just saying that something is happening on the 10th anniversary in September of the Black Parade album.
Yes. I know what's happening.
So do I.
But I guess we're not allowed to say.
Maybe by the time this podcast airs, it'll be out there. But
let's just say, I'll say, I have on pretty good authority that the thing that people most want to happen is not in fact happening, and I wonder if Warner Brothers is really screwing up here, because people really want that thing, and I worry there's going to be a backlash because it's not that thing.
But I think it seems like they were kind of scant on details for why they broke up from what I remember, but
yeah,
it doesn't seem to me that there's lots of animosity that would keep them from ever getting back
together.
There's
no animosity.
Yeah.
I would be very confident that it will happen at some point, but they're all very respectful of their legacy, which I think is smart. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you look back on what they did, every project is very considered and very specific. And I think they would want to come back with a similar thing, but they're also very busy.
Yeah. And I think the fandom of My Chemical Romance has aged really well over the years. There's kind of like how if you go to a Panic at the Disco show now, most of the kids there are probably too young to have been into their first album, A Fever You Can't Sweat Out. I think there's lots of young people who are kind of discovering Three Cheers and Black Parade as like a legacy emo album.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, I will ride for Danger Days forever. I love that album. And I think that what that album was doing was really risky and really hard, which was pivoting towards the light embracing the fact that they were performing as different characters and as different, almost as a different band each time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a straight up glam rock record. They were always more or less a glam rock band. And I think that that album, if you play it for people who are, you know, raise their eyebrows at the makeup, but like, quote unquote, oh no, I like rock music or whatever, that is as close to a really good rock record as you're going to get in the last 10 years. And I think that they can do that again. And I think there's an audience for it. And I agree with you, a surprising audience for it, not necessarily the same audience.
Yeah, so looking towards the future, we were saying before how most of the rock bands that still pop now are older bands that have been kind of grandfathered in. Are there any younger bands around now who you think potentially could get to this level in the future?
Modern Baseball. Okay. I love Modern Baseball, not just because they're from Philly like me.
So we're going to have Modern Baseball, Billboard number one album.
I don't know if that's true, but here's why I like them. First of all, Holy Ghost, the record they put out this year, just is killer. I love that record. I was listening to it on the way here.
They were on this podcast not that long ago.
Were they?
Ago. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love that. I've never met them. Are they good guys?
They're very good guys.
They seem like good
the
guys.
Best.
I think the songwriting jump on this record is so serious and undeniable and impressive. And I think that the thing that really, really got me to fall in love with them is Chris Ryan, who I do my podcast with, who was the one who played me Promise Ring in his college room in 1997. Showed me the YouTube clip of them performing as the Killers for a Halloween show.
Right, yeah.
And I love the Killers. And one of the reasons why I love the Killers is because they don't give a fuck about your, like, scene purity or whatever. They want to write global superstar pop songs. And that is a wonderful ambition and very hard to pull off. And the fact that they recognize what's great about the Killers makes me think that they might find a way to write a big song, but in their own voice. So I feel very, very positive about them.
Two frontmen, both very good songwriters.
Both very good songwriters. I can't tell the difference yet. I gotta, I guess, pay more attention to them. But in terms of young rock bands, I mean, a lot of young rock bands coming from Philly.
But I don't
know if they're like, I mentioned Modern Baseball first because, you know, when I first heard them, I was like, oh, thank God there's a new Get Up Kids album, a new Get Up Kids band to fall in love with. You know, I like Beach Slang, but that dude's super old, and that's not the same thing. So,
but the band is new.
The band is new.
And other members in the band are much younger.
I think they're like...
I know the drummer left recently, so I don't know if this was shook up, but when the last album came out, there was one guy in his 40s, one in his 30s, and one in his 20s in the band.
Yeah, and I wonder what the younger ones feel like when the main dude is in the front just talking about the Replacements and drinking. But, you know, but you tell me, who do you think? Because I can't draw the lines as well as I used to. Modern Baseball made sense to me because they were, I first heard of them when people were like, oh, there's an emo revival.
Mm-hmm.
And so I jumped to them. But
okay, so the one exception to this with the rock bands who do really well now all being kind of like veteran bands,
mm-hmm.
the one exception is 5 Seconds of Summer. Like people call them.
Oh, yeah.
People will call them a boy band, but it's like, no, you're calling them that because they have a young teenage girl fan base. They're a rock band, you know?
Yeah.
And I think they're the exception of, you know, they have had songs in top 40, like albums that sell really well. If they can kind of foster a good following of younger bands who they take out on tour and support like that, there could be some other ones following them into the pop world.
That's very smart because they could use their power for good.
Yeah.
First of all, they write good pop songs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm completely behind your suggestion. But if they also, because they're global, and so it would further break down scene barriers.
Yeah,
but
it
if
would,
they could
Australian.
Find, but if they could find like-minded bands or something and start to build that infrastructure, that would be good. Because I'm not as way not as close to this stuff as you are.
Mm.
But I have very very. I mean, I'm generally very pessimistic about the state of rock on that level.
Mm. Yeah, one band who they've taken on tour is this band State Champs, a pop-punk band from America. I can see that sort of like early 2000s pop sensibility of like a Newfound Glory or a Yellow Card in a good way from them, where, you know, I think they toured opening for Five Sauce in Australia. So they've been out there a little bit. And
oh,
also...
God, Yellow Card. Sorry, just remembering the fucking violin.
Rest in Peace reunions or farewell tour going on right now.
Is it really?
Yeah. But one other one that comes to mind is Balance and Composure.
I don't know either of these bands. I'm going to check them out.
Yeah, they just signed to Vagrant, and they're like the first emo band to sign to Vagrant in like 7 years.
Oh, it's time for me to come back. It's time for me to dust off my cape.
They're a band that maybe not really for radio, but I could see them getting to be like something like a big Vagrant band, like a Alkaline Trio or Dashboard level back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there is still an audience for it, but it's weird, these sort of moments when things sort of go from the regional level and start flirting with the zeitgeist, and you see what happens with it. Those moments always require legitimately good songs like The Middle, but they also require stars or almost stars like Chris Carrabba to invest in and circle around. And
yeah,
you know, it didn't quite go as everyone wanted, but he's happy. He's got new Dashboard music coming soon. I heard a new song. It's amazing.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, Andy, thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun. This is a trip down memory lane, but I want to check out these new bands.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time to get back into the game.
Yeah, we need to take this offline, have some more Jimmy Eat World and Alkaline Trio conversations.
Just, I think anyone listening to this podcast, just do yourself a favor and put on a Praise Chorus by Jimmy Eat World, because sometimes I don't know if there's been a better song written in the last 15 years.
Yeah. Before Your First Date, I Want to Fall in Love Tonight.
Yeah.
Blast a Praise Chorus.
Oh my God, it's so good. It still works. I don't know if it works on first dates, but I think it works in general.
I think with First Date, Blink-182, Jimmy Eat World, I think we've tied this all together
that's
very
how,
well.
That's
we,
how
should,
pros,
we should end on that
That's
note.
How pros do it. Nice symmetry.
That is the show. Yeah, good talk with Andy. That guy really, really knows his stuff. Man, he's a professional podcaster. He is very legit. I think I learned a lot just in hosting, conversing in podcast format from having a chat with that guy. So hope you enjoyed it as well. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Show runs about once a week on Billboard. Runs all different days. It used to be every Friday. Now I'm changing it up. It's going to be posting all different days of the week. So to keep up with the show, you totally subscribe. Head to iTunes, search for The Alt in Our Stars. Just search for it in the podcast app of your phone. You can also download old episodes. Got about a year and a half of archives to listen to. As I said during the show, we had Modern Baseball on not too long ago. Pup, Mitski, Courtney Barnett, Beach Slang, a lot of stuff I think you'd be into if Blink-182 and pop punk and emo and stuff brought you into this podcast. And also other stuff. It's not just that kind of stuff on the show. All sorts of topics, artists, writers, people within the world of alternative music. Try to bring it all into this show. So yeah, until next time, peace out, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.